Hey everyone, this is John, and this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is the mini show for the month. We're kind of doing this in a reverse order because I am solo again. We've had some scheduling issues, but it's mostly my fault. I switched up my schedule to start working nights on the weekend, so kind of disrupted our normal show recording. But we'll be back in a couple of days with the Pokemon show because we do want to get the normal types ranked and get that show out there. But since we're doing the mini show, there are a few games that I wanted to mention. It's probably going to be a shorter episode, but I got two things that I wanted to talk about. First up is that the Pokemon Bank is out and available. This would have been really good timing to record with the Pokemon show, but it is what it is, so I'm going to press forward. And there are a few things that I wanted to talk about with regard to the Pokemon Bank. It is free for 30 days, and you get the entire thing for a year for $5. Kind of on a subscription service, and you do get quite a bit for just the $5. You get the ability to store up to 3,000 Pokemon, so it actually is a really good deal, and I'm not going to miss the $5. I'll probably hang on to this, even though I may not use it as often as some other people might. But the one thing I didn't want to talk about with the Pokemon Bank is that the interface is a little bit clunky when you're trying to transfer Pokemon from like Black and White or Black and White 2 on into your bank. So you download the bank, and then you have to also download a second app, which is the Pokemon Transporter, and that allows you to take guys off of your older cartridges from the fifth generation. So, but doing that is a little bit cumbersome, because what you have to do is you have to pick a box that you want to set up with the transfer tool and put all of the guys into that box, up to 30, that you want to transfer out. So once you transfer them out, then you have to go into the Pokemon Bank with your sixth generation cartridge inserted and take them out of that transfer box and either put them into a different box of the bank, or you have to put them onto your sixth generation cartridge. And then to get 30 more, you have to put your fifth gen cartridge back in, put them into the correct box that you've set up for with the transfer tool, send them to the transfer box, switch cartridges again, so on and so forth every time you want to transfer another group of Pokemon. So it could have been a little bit more user-friendly and having to switch cartridges back and forth. I'm not exactly sure how this would work with multiple 3DSs since I only have my one. But, you know, at least the ability is there. And this is probably the most user-friendly way there has been so far to just transfer Pokemon. There's no cables to connect. You don't have to catch Pokemon in order just to set up a bunch of trades. There's no like silly little mini game in the transfer tool. You don't have to like go to a specific area and just start catching the ones that you've transferred over. It's the most, it's not really super streamlined, but it's the most streamlined way so far to get your guys from one cartridge to another. So that's definitely a positive. So far, I have transferred all of my Generation 1 and Generation 2 Pokemon, so all the guys from Red, Blue, Gold, Silver. And now what I'm doing is I'm hatching a bunch of Pokemon to start filling in the gaps of my Pokédex. I'm almost done with all of the Generation 1 Pokemon Pokédex. So I'll probably spend the next few days filling in the gaps from Generation 1 and Generation 2, but I'll probably not start working on anything past that until next month and kind of do it bit by bit so I don't get super burned out of hatching Pokemon. And I'll probably start doing a bit more wonder trading with some of the guys that I hatch as I go along here, just to kind of keep things interesting in that regard as well. But one thing I am doing is, if there are guys that I really like and I want to use in maybe future run-throughs, I'm taking their first forms that I hatch and I'm sticking them into the Pokemon Bank. And what I'll probably do if I want to do multiple run-throughs of the sixth generation or multiple run-throughs of future games, I'll keep level one guys in the bank and get a new version rather than deleting my file from my Y version. I'll get like X or Z version if that ever happens, and just rip guys off of the bank and start using them in a new game. The next generation I'll probably go through, I don't think I'm going to go in order. I'll probably go through Generation 5 next because I have a lot of them, and some of my favorite Pokemon are from that generation. So that'll probably be next on tap in March. But again, I'm probably not going to transfer any more guys until then. But the Pokemon Bank is finally here. And it is a good way to start filling up my decks. I was catching a few guys in Y version as I was going through the game. But at a certain point, I was catching guys who I knew I already had. So I just decided to wait for the bank. And I had to wait a little bit longer than originally announced. But the bank is here, and it's a really great little tool. The one other game that I wanted to talk about on this show is Wild Arms, which is a PS1 RPG from 1997. Not a Nintendo game, but it's a game that I've been putting a lot of time into recently. I'm put about 8 hours in the last couple of days, and it is an RPG with a really distinct Western aesthetic. It's a PS1 RPG, but it looks a lot like an SNES RPG, especially in the overworlds and the towns and dungeons, but the battles are polygonal. Actually, the overworld towns and dungeons parts of the game remind me a lot of Chrono Trigger. It's not nearly as colorful, or the environments aren't nearly as diverse as Chrono Trigger, and that's because of the really heavy Western aesthetic. They don't really mess around with the aesthetic all that much. They pretty strictly stick to that. There is also a really great soundtrack to the game. It's got this really cool Western music to it that's really catchy, and actually pretty diverse group of music for all being pretty heavily influenced by the Western aesthetic. There are three playable characters, and all of them have a really good depth to the type of skills. So, for example, in battle, you have your basic commands for RPGs: attack, defense, items, run. There's a command in this game as well to change your equipment mid-battle as well, which is important because certain types of equipment will give you immunity to different status ailments: poison, silence, confusion, so on and so forth. In addition to those basic commands, each character has specific skills or techniques that they can use in battle, which I'll get to in just a second. But in addition to the different type of skills that each character can use in battle, there's also a force meter, which is a meter that builds up the more you perform certain actions in battle, like the more you attack or use a skill or be attacked. So the longer the battle goes, the more your skill meter will build. And what happens is with that skill meter is that when your character starts filling up certain chunks, 25% full, 50% full, 75% full, so on and so forth, they can use different types of skills that will sometimes has something to do with their specific skills, but other times different abilities altogether. For example, everyone, all three characters, once they get to 50%, are able to summon a monster into battle to do elemental type damage, depending on what they are, to the enemy. So everyone has the ability to summon, and who you summon depends on what particular item you have equipped in your accessories. So, and in addition to that, sometimes it allows one character, your mage character, to use an item on everyone, but only like have -1 from your inventory, which is a good way to heal a status ailment on everybody. And another character just kind of allows him to perform an action first in battle, which is kind of pointless because he's the fastest character you have anyway. So in addition to all these things that you can use in battle, there's also tools that you can use outside of battle in like the world map, or a dungeon is a more likely place that you would use it. And what happens is each character has their own specific tools that they can use, and you gather more as the game goes on, and you're able to actually flip between your three characters as the game, like at any point in the game, from your pause menu, from pressing your pause button, you're able to switch the character and switch which tool they are using. So for example, your protagonist character, Rudy, is able to use bombs, and that does exactly what it sounds like it would do. There are certain like walls in the game or things that you have to blow up in your path in order to progress. So in certain sections, it's ideal to play as him. Others, like your other character, Jack, is a character who has like this little ferret partner, and he can kind of send that guy out to like grab an item that's far away or open up a chest that explodes. So he kind of becomes like your little like hook shot, as it were. And he also gets another skill later on that gives him a lighter, and he can use that to light torches to, you know, illuminate darker areas or to burn things down that are in your path, like piles of hay and such. And Cecilia is your mage character, and at first she starts with an ability to let her open magically sealed doors, but then she gets really soon after an ability which is a stopwatch, which allows you to rewind time in a certain area. So if you're working on a puzzle, like a little slide block puzzle, and you mess it up, you can bust her out, use her stopwatch, and rewind to a point where it's recoverable, which is one that I really haven't used all that much. But the other skills of the other characters that I mentioned are really useful and actually add a really cool layer of adventure to like the overworld, like dungeons and towns and stuff, because it adds an exploration to it. And It reminds me actually a lot of Golden Sun. It doesn't have like the same like depth of adventure or puzzle solving as Golden Sun, but it's really cool because you're moving through a dungeon and actually doing stuff in the dungeon rather than just anticipating the next random battle that'll pop up. And speaking of random battles, the battles are random, which is a terrible relic from RPGs of the NES and before, which should have been done away with decades ago. But the encounter rate isn't unbelievably terrible, and your escape rate, if you just want to flee a battle, is actually pretty high as well. So I mentioned the specific characters a second ago. I wanted to get into more details about their specific skills in battle. So Rudy, who is the character that uses bombs, also uses guns. So he's kind of your munitions expert, and he gets different guns throughout the game, and they're upgradable at stores. So it's not like you get a gun and you're just waiting for your next one and just start using that one altogether. In fact, I use my first gun more than any of the other guns so far because I've upgraded it the most. And upgrading these guns can get really expensive. And, you know, grinding is another thing that is pretty prevalent in most JRPGs, but I haven't really grinded too much for levels in this game. The only grinding I've done is for money, because I like being able to upgrade things as soon as I move into the next town, buy all of the new weapons and the new armor, and upgrade the guns as much as possible. So it's cool that the weapons that you get, the guns that you get for Rudy toward the early parts of the game, are useful all the way through. And other than, you know, having the guns, he's also your kind of your tank character. He's got good attack and defense, but kind of slow. Jack, who was the character that I mentioned earlier that has a little ferret hookshot dude and the lighter, is kind of your sword master. He learns different sword techniques that have different abilities in battle. One, for example, attacks multiple enemies another one just does a ton of damage, and then another ability actually, like, you use on an ally and it heals your ally, this sword technique. And he learns these actually at different little story moments throughout the game, and there are actually some that are missable, because if you're not, like, exploring the town and moving, like, around different places, blowing up crates and talking to people, it is possible to miss some of these sword abilities that he has, and a lot of them are really useful, and it's really cool to have all of them. And other than, like, the sword skills, he's also your speedster character. He's got good attack and good speed, so he's usually moving first in battle. And Cecilia, like I mentioned earlier, is your mage character. She uses all of your magic spells, your white and your black magic. But it's an interesting way that she learns them. She doesn't learn them by leveling up. You learn them by finding crests in towns and dungeons in treasure chests. And these items allow you to go to a magic store and basically create your own spell. So it's basically an exchange. So you give the magic shop owner a crest, and you're able to pick a spell that you want. And it doesn't give you a list of spells, but it kind of gives you a grid of white and black magic, and it'll tell you, like, a general outcome of what using that spell will do. And then you learn it, and you get to name your own spells if you want to, or you can use default names. And it adds an extra incentive to really comb over the world to make sure you're finding all of these, because there are 32, and then there are also upgrades to all of them as well. So finding these crests is really important. And magic, you know, it's useful against some enemies and bosses, but a lot of it is also useful to upgrading your own characters, increasing their defense, increasing their speed, decreasing the enemy's, like, defense and speed, curing status ailments. So it's not purely offensive. And actually, a lot of times, in most battles, it's just easier to spam the attack button rather than try to seek out magical weaknesses or summon monsters, because you can get through a lot of battles really quickly just by spamming attack. And Cecilia, you know, like you expect with any mage, low attack but good magic and magic resistance. So I mentioned, like, the necessity to, or the ease of spamming attack to get through battles. Bosses, you do, like, have to use a little bit more skill. That's mostly where you're going to be using, like, your sword skills with Jack or your gun skills with Rudy. Because what I didn't mention earlier was the sword techniques use MP, so you can't just spam those throughout the whole game. You have to think about when you're using them. And the guns don't use MP, but you have a certain amount of ammunition. And you can find, like, spare ammunition throughout the game as well. But you have a certain amount of ammunition that you can use before you run out. And how to refill once you go through everyone is, there's usually a guy by, like, a town end or by the entrance of the town who will refill your ammunition for a price. So hanging on to as much of your MP or your ammunition as possible for a boss battle is ideal. The game is really briskly paced. There are the dungeons are usually pretty short, but has enough of, like, branching off paths that are short enough not to get you confused, but enough to, like, tuck some items away where you might not miss them, or you might miss them if you're not looking around. And the story is briskly paced as well. There's not a whole lot of exposition going on, and, you know, it's a pretty decent RPG story. It's not anything super special, but it's not anything super cliched either, and a lot of that has to do with the Western aesthetic. But basically, there's this ultimate evil that you're trying to keep from awakening. It's actually also very similar to Golden Sun in structure as well. The protagonist is silent, which I appreciate. Rudy doesn't talk a whole lot, but he's also kind of a strange protagonist, because Cecilia and Jack have their own backstories and goals, whereas Rudy's kind of a blank slate, and therefore doesn't really have much effect on the narrative, and sometimes just feels like he's tagging along for the ride, which, you know, I guess isn't really too dissimilar from other RPGs of, like, the 16 and the 32 and the 64-bit generations. So this is a really cool RPG. I'm really enjoying it a lot. I'm looking forward to putting more time into it. I would really love to see a sequel to Wild Arms. I believe there were four or five games and a remake that stopped on the PS2. I'm not really sure who developed. I can't remember. But I don't know if they're still around or if they're still making RPGs. I haven't heard of anything from the makers of Wild Arms recently. But it would be really cool if we got a sequel to this on the Wii U. So It's because it's a really interesting RPG with quite a bit of depth to the gameplay and the battles. But anyway, I've been going on for a little while here, kind of a short show, but I'm not going to be just rambling on by myself for an hour. So next week, we're going to do the Pokemon show. We're going to rank the normal types, and then we're going to move to the Super Nintendo show after that and wrap it all up with the official show. So we'll get back onto a normal rotation next week. So until then, everybody.